Good afternoon and welcome to Indie Business Podcast number 265. I'm your host, Donna Maria. I really, really am, even though I don't sound like myself. I have some sort of bug, but you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. And I sound a lot worse than I feel, so don't worry about me. And, you know, I just am so excited to be here because I love my show. I love all the guests on the show, but now and then a guest just comes along. You look at the book, you look at the guest website and the Facebook page, and you go, oh, my goodness, this person is going to blow my audience away because there's such a connection, I can already tell, between what she and her co-author share in their book and in their work and what I believe in and what I know every one of you believes in. So let's get started. Our guest today is the co-author of The Big Enough Company, Creating a Business That Works for You. And I know that resonates with you guys. Her name is Adelaide Lancaster, and she is the co-author of this fantastic book. Along with her business partner, Amy Abrams, and also the co-author of the book, she is the founder of In Good Company, a community-based learning center and workspace for women business owners in New York City. In addition to her entrepreneurial ventures, she also works as a consultant and business advisor. Her work has been featured in the New York Times, the Huffington Post, and on MSNBC. Adelaide lives in Philadelphia, and she's joining us from her office there right here on Indie Business Podcast. Adelaide, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Now, Adelaide, I love, love, love the title of this book, in case you couldn't tell, The Big Enough Company. As soon as I saw it, I went, I have a company that's big enough.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. That title came. Really exciting, right?
Yes. What's the inspiration for that title?
You know, we have seen a lot of things over the years in working with entrepreneurs, and I think that actually some of these conversations have gelled really well with what's been going on in the rest of our economy and our world. And I think, you know, in general, a lot of us have been asking what's enough, what do we need, what's most important, and really settling on the importance of satisfaction, especially entrepreneurs who feel like they could grow faster, bigger, do it in a, you know, particular kind of way, but really kind of struggle and agonize over how many compromises they want to make when they are the boss. And so we, in a lot of our work with entrepreneurs, we really focus on helping people to define success for themselves, and it sounds like you do the same with, you know, with your audience. And so we've, you know, over the years come to settle on this idea of what is a big enough company. It's not always the point, you know, it's not always the goal to build a company as big as it possibly could be, because a lot of times that comes with compromises that, you know, don't make us satisfied. So we, in the book and in our practice, in our consulting practice, really focus on helping people to identify what's enough for them, what are their goals, and what kind of, you know, makes them tick, and how can they build a business that's big enough to meet those goals rather than big enough to meet somebody else's goals.
I just such a perfect overview of the book and the stories in the book. And you guys, let me tell you, this book is not just do this, do that, ABC, 1, 2, 3. This book has stories, real life stories of people who have created their own big enough company and found that that successful integration, right, Adelaide, between their life and their business, which I think in years past we've kind of overlooked. I know sometimes people think, you know, well, if my business isn't grossing, you know, $1 million or $2 million in revenues, it doesn't matter. And that is just not true, is it?
No, it really isn't. I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I think that's been one of the more frustrating things about the work that we do, is talking to people who are just, you know, so innovative and, you know, so interesting, and they're successful, and their businesses have really made an impact on their industry, and they're doing things that are meaningful to them, and they're making a living doing it, and but still sometimes hesitate to call themselves successful because, I don't know, because they have a certain definition in their mind. They think, well, it could be, you know, it's not a $1 million business, so I guess it's, you know, is it successful, or it's not a $2 million business, or I don't have 20 employees, I only have 10, or I don't have 2, I just have myself. And so we really wanted to kind of push on all those preconceived notions about what is successful, and you know, help people to define it for themselves, because it's just, you know, in my opinion and in our work with entrepreneurs. I really feel like if you're getting what you want, if you're getting the rewards that you want from entrepreneurship, then you've created a successful venture.
And let's talk about that, too. I'm glad you mentioned that because it leads right into the first point I wanted to talk with you about, and that is this question, like, what's in it for you? I know when I first start working with people, when I get a new client, one of my first questions is, so what do you want your business to do for you? And a lot of times it throws people off because they're like, oh, my business is supposed to do something for me? Well, yeah.
So
I love that your book starts with that question. What's in it for you? Tell us why it's so important, Adelaide, to make sure you ask yourself that question, you know, early on.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's such a great question that you ask your clients too. I think that oftentimes when people, even when they just talk about their business or they talk about themselves as an entrepreneur, they start with why they started this business, and the emphasis really is on the business and instead of on themselves. And we think, it's so important to know why you're choosing entrepreneurship. Because the answer to that question, that, you know, what do you want your business to give you or do for you, or and why have you chosen to be an entrepreneur, the answer to that really can define and should define how you actually structure your business from the get-go, how you choose to grow it over time. Because the truth is, if you're not, you know, getting those rewards that you're specifically looking for from your business, then it's really not working for you. And that's, in my opinion, not a very sustainable, employment option for yourself, and it's not a very sustainable business because it's not going to make you happy and satisfied. So we work with a lot of folks to help them identify what is it that they, you know, want to get from their business or from being an entrepreneur just in general, and how might that influence the way that they structure things. So just by way of an example, one of the women that we profile in the book, she's a phenomenally talented graphic designer, and like many entrepreneurs, she wanted control over her time, but specifically she wanted to be able to control when she worked and where she worked. So she loves to travel and do lots of different things. She was also caring for a sick parent when she became an entrepreneur, and so she really needed that freedom to be able to not work on a certain day if she didn't, you know, if she couldn't. So for her, actually, the first way that she set up her business was the way that a lot of graphic designers might. They go out and get clients, and she felt pretty beholden to those specific accounts. And over time, she actually changed her business to be more product-focused because it allowed her to travel for several months out of the year, work when she wanted to, set up systems, you know, that helped keep the business ticking and keep her focused on the kind of work that she loved. But it wasn't until she could really be very clear about what it was that she wanted her business to afford her, that she could make those important changes and really get her business from, you know, working well, but, you know, not giving her everything she wanted, to really, really working for her.
Good, good. Such a wonderful example. And, you know, I want your thoughts on this, too. Years ago, I read a book. It's a really good book. I'm not going to say the name of it because I didn't like this part of it, but I want your thoughts. It was a really great book about entrepreneurship and how great it is to have a business and, you know, with tips and, you know, sort of the usual thing that's useful but not anything new. One of the things this author said was the last thing you want to do when you create a business for yourself, Adelaide, this person said, is you don't want to create a job for yourself. And I want your thoughts on that. You know, a lot of people consider, you know, we all define job differently, but I think what this person was talking about was, you know, oh my goodness, you don't have to show up every day, you want everything to be systematized. And, you know, I just wonder if you think that that's a little bit narrow, a little bit of a narrow mindset. It doesn't encompass what people may love to do, how they want to spend their time. Tell us what you think about that.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I might know the book you're talking about, maybe not, but I think that there has been a huge push in the past in terms of, you know, I mean, it's not hard to find business advice that talks about, that sells a particular way of doing things, and I think that that was something that we wanted to approach a little bit differently in acknowledging that there isn't one right way to do things. And that definitely presents some challenges, and that's one of the reasons why we have 100 stories in the book, because we're trying to, you know, demonstrate how many different ways there are to go about it. But, You know, the truth is that people derive pleasure and satisfaction from a lot of different parts of their work and their role, or, you know, so if we call it job. And I know many entrepreneurs who really want that consistency. They love their you know, a real expert at what they do, and they want to hold on to that. They want, it doesn't, you know, even if it requires showing up every day, that's what they love doing. So why would they want to give that piece of it away? So there's many, and we included many entrepreneurs in the book whose stories really kind of fly in the face of this automatic systemization of everything, or, you know, putting everything so that it can be automated. It just doesn't allow their business to achieve, to be known for what they want it to be known for, and it doesn't give them the kind of work that they want to be doing that's meaningful and challenging. So, you know, checking in on systems and managing people, that's not always that rewarding to people. And so sometimes it's the direct one-on-one work, or the, you know, cultivation of your brand in a very hands-on kind of way. Mm-hmm. So I work with a lot of entrepreneurs who want that, mm-hmm. Who want a very hands-on role. And I think that that's great. I mean, I don't think that one way is necessarily better than the other, but the point is really that you're doing something that feels rewarding to you and that leverages your best skills and talents.
Yes. Yes, and that certainly is your next point. But, you know, the takeaway from the first part, and I think this is just so important for people who are brand new to business, or even if you've been in business for a while and maybe you think it's time to sort of maybe retrofit a few things, and that's a process that we all go through, and it should be continuous. But just make sure that you always know that no matter what you're doing, you know what's in it for you and what you're getting out of it. Adelaide, there's nothing wrong, right, with every month or even more sitting down and saying, okay, this is what I want out of my business. Let's look at the last 30 days and say, did I get it? And if I didn't, what can I do to get what I said I want, right?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there's I am a big fan of short-term compromise. You know, I'm very realistic about entrepreneurship in general. I know that being an entrepreneur, you know, being one myself and working with so many, I know how much hard work goes into running a business. And I also know that there are a lot of things that you might not love to do that need to get done. And businesses change a lot. The markets change a lot. So they're, you know, our businesses are sort of all punctuated by these small periods of time where we need to be adjusting or reevaluating or, you know, doing things new or different, or we, you know, just have to kind of do what needs to be done to meet a deadline. But I think the challenge is, and this is the benefit of the check-in, you know, that you're recommending, the challenge is when we get stuck in this mode where we just think that our jobs or our business, we just need to do what needs to be done all the time, and we don't have a window on that. We're not saying to ourselves, you know, I'm an entrepreneur because I like to choose when I work, or I like to choose my clients, or I like to choose who I work with. You know, in this next 6 weeks, it's going to be pretty tough, and I'm going to have to compromise on some of those things. I might have to work more than I want, or I might have to deal with a client that is less than desirable, but that's not the ultimate goal, and I'm not going to continue to say yes to that over time.
Right, right. We can accept that some of the stuff is temporary.
Yes, right. Otherwise, that would be a little unrealistic.
You know, and that is so true. I'm so glad you said that because, you know, anyone who has a business knows, and as your friends would tell you if they haven't already, you know, we don't see as much of you as we used to, or, you know, it's the holidays and you're making your products and why don't we go shopping anymore? And there are those, as you mentioned earlier, trade-offs. But once again, it's so important, as your book points out and as the stories in your book point out, that this continuous process of making sure that we get out of it what's in it for us, right, Adelaide? Because especially as women, we change over time. So what you want in 2010 may not be exactly the same as what you want in 2013. And so that analysis and continuing it is just so important. And your book talks about, as you do that analysis over time and continuously, how do you make sure that your business suits your strengths? What do you recommend that people do to make sure that, you know, as they're moving forward, making decisions about whether to accept new opportunities that come along, how do you figure in your strengths and make sure that you maximize them and I guess minimize your weaknesses too while you're at it?
Right. that would be good as well. You know, I think that it's the first step is really actually just being, you know, sort of seeing the opportunity for what it is. So, if you look at the opportunity of entrepreneurship or your opportunity to run your own business or be your own boss as the way that you get to create your own job description, you get to create your dream job, you get to give yourself the work that you want, that if you see that opportunity in that way, it's a lot easier to work towards that goal or that end. Again, I think it's easy for people to slip into the mindset of I'm sort of a slave to my business. My business does this certain thing, therefore I need to do all the pieces and all the parts to make it work. But that's that is sort of a surefire way to become dissatisfied at some point in time or another. So I think that really recognizing the opportunity that entrepreneurship presents to create your ideal job and to give yourself the job that you want is sort of the first step. The second step is certainly having an idea of what your skills and strengths are. And just like I like that you pointed out how our needs can change over time, and the truth is that, our interests can change over time too. So, I love the example of social media. I think that social media has presented a lot of entrepreneurs with, it's been amazing. It's sort of opened up this huge opportunity for them to connect with people in a different way, market in a different way, and they've been really surprised by how much they've loved that role or they've loved engaging in that kind of medium. And so sort of as they get that feedback about themselves and, this is really cool and this is really interesting, we always encourage them to kind of find ways to build that into their role. How can they be involved either from an execution level or a strategic level, but if that is a new and exciting thing to you that really helps you connect with your customers or your brand in a new way, then let's work it into your job. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, there's lots of people who hate it. They can't stand it. They want nothing to do with it. They feel like it's taken over their lives, but they feel like it's something that, quote, has to be done. So therefore, they've, now saddled themselves with, they spend so much time doing it, and it's come to define their job, even if it's something they really don't enjoy. And of course, it's not true that, that has to be that way either. So then in that kind of case, we'd really encourage people to pay attention to that and think about other ways to achieve the same goals without, shifting their job so dramatically.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you mentioned that social media thing. That's such a powerful asset for small businesses in so many ways and is defined in so many different ways. There's no one way to even define it, but I'm glad you mentioned that because it is important, but it's also important that you use it the way that works for you, the way that works for your business. And, and Adelaide, if we could stay with that for just a second, because I think even just that process frustrates people because, and I want to get your thoughts on how to overcome that frustration because I feel so many people, and I hear them say, well, I feel like I must use social media because I know how important it is. I see other businesses that are similarly situated to mine using it successfully and increasing their customer base, but I just don't, I feel like it's almost an imposition on what I really, really love to do. What's your advice for people who know they need to do something, and social media in this case in particular, but just struggle with accepting, okay, wait, I've got to fit this in. How do I fit this in? And oftentimes, Adelaide, it means it never gets fit in, and that just adds to the frustration. How do you help people?
That perennial to-do list that just sort of accumulates on its own in the corner. And there are three things that come to mind, and I use these three things a lot. So one is, looking for a model that feels comfortable to you. I think that people work really, really hard, but too often reinvent the wheel. So if they either think, this is the one way to do it. My competitor talks to their audience in this way, and therefore I need to do the same thing. Or they think, like, I'm going to do something totally different, and then they spend a lot of time reinventing the wheel. So I'm always a fan when you're testing something, experimenting, deciding how you want to approach a new, aspect or skill or task, or even product or service, to look to the marketplace. So I think that spending a lot of time listening and looking for good models that you say, even if it's, you could run, a service company and you find a beverage company that really talks to their audience in a way that feels congruent and authentic to you. So I think spending a lot of time listening to the marketplace and finding some models where you say, I like how these people do it. Because the truth is that none of us are going to be motivated to put anything in place in our business if we look at it and think it's awful, or if we cringe when we read it. So I think that finding good models, and there's tons out there. I mean, people talk to their brands or to their audiences and to their followers in a lot of different ways. So I think that finding good models, and then I think once you have a sense of what feels right for you, putting specific boundaries in place so that it doesn't overtake your life. So this, I think, can be different for everybody, but maybe somebody wants to, really likes a lot of focus time and they want to spend 5 hours on a Monday afternoon planning out their social media for the entire week, and then they don't think about it again. Or maybe they want to spend an hour each morning checking in and scheduling things for that day. So I think that having very specific boundaries helps that, allows us to get in that mindset of, okay, this is what I'm going to be focused on for the next hour, for the next couple of hours, but then I get a break. I don't have to be constantly having that nagging feeling, oh, I should be doing this, I should be doing that. And then the third thing, I think, is getting help where you need it. So, again, whether it's offloading some of the pieces of execution or helping or enlisting a creative mind who, can help you think strategically about fun or interesting ways to engage your audience. So I think that, thinking about where do you need help and making sure that you get that. And again, it could be an hour consultation session that sets your strategy for the entire season.
Oh, how valuable is that? We're talking to Adelaide Lancaster, the co-author of The Big Enough Company, Creating a Business That Works for You. And I love the cover of this book. It's so simple. And it's got extra small, small, medium, large, and extra large. And then next to that, it says you, and the you is circled. Because we're talking about how you can make your business your own by taking examples from what you see other people doing, but then just integrating them into your life. And Adelaide was just sharing about the importance of trying different things. And Adelaide, your answers are feeding right into my next question, which is experimentation. I know this is my 265th podcast, but the first one I did, Adelaide, was a total huge experiment. I just was like, okay, well, this sounds fun. Let's just go ahead and do a show. I called a few people, and they came on, and we chatted for a whole hour. And I thought, well, that was a little bit more than fun. This could actually help me build my business. It's not for everyone, but it was for me, and here I am 5 years later. So, but there's millions of other things I experimented with, Adelaide, that did not work out. So I want you to share, from all these people you interviewed and from your own personal experience, how important is it to try new things when you have no idea whether they're going to actually work the exact way you want them to? Why should we do that? And your book says we should.
Absolutely. And I think that approaching, entrepreneurship, you can argue that it's like the whole business is one big experiment. And oftentimes when we ask people how they experimented with their business, that's what they say, with the entire thing. The whole thing is, something I wasn't sure about. I think that experimentation is interesting because, similar to other skills like networking and stuff like that, it's something that we often see a resistance to in the beginning and then several years in. And so I think that there's an interesting correlation there because, in the beginning, oftentimes people are really hesitant to experiment because they are programmed to wanting to get it right. Whether it's in former jobs that weren't very supportive of experimentation or school environments or something like that, I think that we're programmed a lot of times to kind of think behind the scenes and then put a finished product out there. But as an entrepreneur and as a business owner, that mentality really does us a huge disservice. The primary reason is that we don't have enough data by ourselves to create a good enough product to be out there to be out there and to be perfect from the get-go. And in order to save ourselves a lot of time and money and agony and frustration, we need that feedback from the marketplace. Like, we need people to say, yes, I love your T-shirts, and then you try to sell them and you see that only the purple one sells and nobody buys the black one or something like that. You know, I mean, you need that kind of, you know, that data and that input. So we are, I mean, I'm a huge fan of experimentation from the get-go, and I think that most businesses should start as this, you know, ongoing iterative experiment, because I think that that really positions people to, you know, it kind of puts your expectations in the right place, and it opens you up to learning and feedback, which I think is really important. But the truth is also that, you know, as sometimes as entrepreneurs, we become really complacent. So whether, you know, it's a couple years into our business and we realize we haven't really met any new people recently, we haven't tried anything new recently, we haven't really pushed ourselves because we're kind of just going with the flow, following the business momentum and sticking with what works. But I think that it's important for us as entrepreneurs to push ourselves. So as we have ideas or as we have, you know, we see a problem or a challenge in our business, experimenting to find an answer to that is a great, you know, is a great tool or tactic to use. Sometimes it can redefine the entire direction the business goes. Sometimes it can help us to further see the value that we're already providing. So, you know, last year we actually – in my business, we ran an experiment, we're always doing it, but we ran a very specific experiment in that, you know, we have a community and a membership where everybody pays for a membership and they can come to all of our classes for free. We're always, always asked by people who aren't members, I just want to come to one class. Can I do that? And we have to date always said no. And so then we decided, well, maybe we should run something, a different kind of program, leveraging the same kind of teachers where people could pay just to come to one class. And it's not about members, it's just about the educational component. So we set up a whole curriculum. We did an entire spring semester. We got fabulous teachers, and you know it was. I don't know what the criteria for success or failure was. It didn't lose money. We got people to all the classes, but it was such a burden because it was a totally what we learned was it was a totally different marketing strategy, you know, to find people to come to a one-off thing versus we're usually marketing this wonderful year-long, high-touch, involved experience, put us in a very different position. Right. And so I think that, you know, even in that kind of experience, it really helped us to cement that, you know what, this is what we want our business to be known for, this is what we're really good at, and we wouldn't have been able to relearn that if we hadn't experimented.
Yes, that's just, thank you for sharing that example. And I know you have other ones, I'm sure you do, even though we don't have time for them, where your customers or potential customers have said they wanted something else and you've been able to give it to them and it's worked out well. And I'm, you know, I can see from your website and your blog and all the work that you're doing that you have a really good high-touch connection with the people that come to you. And that is just such a joy to see. I can see that you and your partner love what you do. And we all here at Indie Business Podcast applaud that so much. The Big Enough Company, Creating a Business That Works for You by Adelaide Lancaster and Amy Abrams. Before we go, Adelaide, give us your website addresses. Where should we follow you on Twitter and join you on Facebook?
Excellent. I would love to be involved in conversation with everybody. So our website is ingoodcompany.com. Our Twitter handle is ingoodcmpny. So it's company without the O and the A. And our Facebook is /ingoodcompanyworkplaces. But all of that information can be found on our website, ingoodcompany.com.
And Adelaide, if we're ever visiting New York City, can we stop by and say hi?
Absolutely. And you can feel free to send me an email and I'll set it up.
Super.
Excellent.
Thank you so much. Guest book, fantastic examples, real life stories of women just like you and me, who have created what they wanted out of a business, shaped it, morphed it over time to have just the kind of lifestyle that they want, which you guys know I am a big fan of. So Adelaide Lancaster and Amy Abrams, if you're listening, we love this book. Thank you for sharing your work. I'm so excited to have you here on Indie Business Podcast. We will be here next week with Phil Simon, a fantastic right here on Indie Business Podcast next week after Thanksgiving. Happy holidays. I'll see you next week, guys, and my voice will be back. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.